Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, preparations are underway in South Sudan in anticipation of the arrival of rebel leader Riek Machar, which might bring an end to a two-year civil unrest.
They are not yet part of this government. Up to that time, when the vice president takes oath. But as of now, there is no way they would come in and start preparing program for the first vice president so that he is received at the airport and he is brought to J1 for taking oath.
And leaders meeting at the Munich Security Conference in Addis Ababa are calling for a global approach to security threats.
The dimension of the terrorist threat need to be assessed correctly, need to be discussed jointly by Africans and Europeans, because we can no longer isolate ourselves from each other.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link on Monday, April the 18th. My name is Abubakar Jallo, and stay tuned for these stories coming up shortly.
Top story.
South Sudan is gearing up for the arrival of rebel leader Riek Machar. This will be the first time the former vice president will be in the capital Juba since he broke up ties with President Salva Kiir. His arrival is seen as a milestone, and many hope it will facilitate the return of peace in the country. After more than 2 years of fighting, Machar is expected to take up his post alongside his rival, President Kiir. The transitional government will comprise some 30 cabinet ministers. But as James Shimayula reports, there is tension in Juba as government has turned down some of the demands from Machar's team.
Preparations have been completed ahead of Riek Machar's arrival in South Sudan's capital Juba. Machar, who has spent more than 2 years in the bushes in the northern part of South Sudan, fighting government troops, will not be given a heroic welcome. The authorities in Juba have banned him from addressing a press conference on his arrival at the Juba airport. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei explains why.
They are not yet part of this government. Up to that time, when their vice president takes oath. But as of now, there is no way they would come in and start preparing program for the first vice president so that he is received at the airport and he is brought to J1 for taking oath. The government program for reception of the first vice president shall be as follows. One. The government committee in charge of the reception, accommodation and catering for the members of the SPLM shall be responsible for the reception. The committee will determine other stakeholders, representatives of the political parties and senior government officials.
But William Ezekiel Riek Machar's new spokesman in Juba asserts that their leader deserves a grand homecoming.
He must take oath once he arrives, the day he arrives, the same day. That state of emergency has to be lifted. On our side, we oppose and we reject this idea for the leader to come, the first vice president to go, and again comes in the morning for swearing in. This is unfair. And why should we make just one occasion, two occasions? Why should we want to waste resources more than we can do it just in a one day?
So, what does the Riek Machar's program in Juba look like? Michael Makuei again.
Level at the airport, and after reception at the official level at the airport, he will proceed to his residence, where he will be receiving people, where he will be holding meetings. And the second day, that is day two, he will go and take oath of office. After the oath of office, he will proceed to his office.
The peace deal, brokered by the United Nations, United Kingdom, the African Union, as well as Norway and the United States, bore fruit when it enabled President Salva Kiir and Machar to sign an agreement in August last year.
Jim Chimayula reporting. 2 years of conflict plunged the country into a deplorable situation. As the transitional government assumes office, it is set to face many challenges. One of them is addressing a massive food shortage in the country. The country has a food deficit of about 400,000 metric tons. That's according to the World Food Programme. From Juba, Wake Simon Wudu reports.
Teresa Nyadet at the UN camp in Juba is cooking South Sudanese local food commonly known as Kisira. Nyadet and her 8 children have been living in the camp since South Sudan descended into war in December 2013. She says they survive on food ration provided by the aid agencies at the camp. Her family gets 50 kg of sorghum to live on per month. However, her food ration lasts only after 15 days, she says.
Our problem here at the camp is lack of food. Instead, we get enough water. I'm working in this small restaurant so that if the UN distribute food aid, I can be in a position to buy additional food.
Nyadete runs a tiny restaurant near the UN camp to supplement food rations she gets from aid agencies. However, her family cannot afford two meals a day.
If we make good sales, I'll manage to get 20 South Sudanese pounds in a day. Half of that money, I'll buy bread, and 10 South Sudanese pounds will buy milk for the children.
Nyadet's experience reflects the hardships facing millions of South Sudanese people. Jane Gordon works with the South Sudan Women Entrepreneurs Association, a civil society organization that is involved in equipping women with the business skills across the country. Gordon says the economic downturn in recent months across South Sudan has worsened the situation in the country, making it harder for many families to have even a single meal per day.
The increase of prices is high, increases rampantly. It did not go, like from one pound up to 100. It's extremely difficult for these women.
The World Food Program and FAO recently said that about 400,000 metric tons of food is urgently needed to support millions of South Sudanese. Bennett Owadi, WFP head of food security and vulnerability analysis in South Sudan, says the situation in the country was expected to worsen because of the economic slowdown.
What is significant at this point in time is that due to the depreciation of the local currency, due to the economic downturn, the imports are no longer able to meet that gap.
Humanitarian agencies in Juba have called on the government to improve the security situation across the country for agencies to access and provide food aid to the very vulnerable families, especially in the northern region.
Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The Munich Security Conference met for the first time in Africa in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. Under the theme Why Africa Matters, leaders and experts on security issues deliberated the possibility of a joint fight against insecurity. Coletta Wanjohi has more.
The meeting was held by the Munich Security Conference, an international platform for informal dialogue on foreign and security policy. 60 security experts were in attendance. The experts noted that northern and eastern Africa are fragile areas as far as violent extremism and crisis is concerned, hence the need for quick joint efforts to prevent and manage the insecurity in order to avoid spillover effects. Ambassador Wolfgang Isinger, the chairman of the Munich Security Conference, said that there needs to be more effort to ensure global approach to security threats.
The dimension of the terrorist threat need to be assessed correctly, need to be discussed jointly by Africans and Europeans, because we can no longer isolate ourselves from each other.
Tedros Adhanom, the Foreign Affairs Minister for Ethiopia, emphasized that Africa and Europe are inseparable.
Unlike in the past, the implications of Africa's problems will not be limited to the African continent. Whether it's displacement due to conflict, climate change and poverty, or security challenges related to terrorism, arms and drug trafficking, it obviously goes beyond the continental borders. In the same vein, the rise of xenophobic tendencies in the West or the evolving geopolitical dynamics in the Middle East will have a significant bearing on the African continent.
Ismail Shergui, the Commissioner for Political Affairs at the African Union, noted that African nations have led peacekeeping operations against terrorism in countries like Central African Republic, Mali and Somalia, where the UN either would not have been ready to deploy or would not consider suitable to engage in. Continuity and success of such missions, he says, is, however, hampered by lack of sustainable funding.
We have no mechanism like the UN UN assessed contribution for provide secure and reliable funding. Our ablest leaders have grappled for this problem and committed to fund 25% of peace support operation.
Other issues discussed in the security conference include cyber insecurity, increase in migration as a result of insecurity, development of Africa's regional security architecture, as well as strengthening of local governance structures, particularly in the health, justice, and security sectors.
DW Coletta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa. It's 36 years since Zimbabwe became independent from Great Britain. Since then, the country has seen only one president, Robert Mugabe. He is blamed for the country's economic and political problems. The opposition and civil society leaders have been calling on the 92-year-old leader to step down. DW's Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital, Harare.
Those are part of Zimbabweans demonstrating in the country's capital city, Harare. They are not only demanding for a better Zimbabwe, but also want President Robert Mugabe to step down. Former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai led the demonstration, which was attended by about 8,000 people.
We are saying as a statement that it's time Mugabe listened to the voice of the people. Yes. And that the people shall rule, the people shall liberate themselves. Yes. We are not afraid to lead the struggle even at its worst time. What we are fighting for is for your future. Yes. Next time, when we organize full logistics, we'll be able to double and even treble what we have done today.
Tsvangirai accuses Mugabe of leading Zimbabwe to a deplorable state. Poverty levels are on the rise, while unemployment rate now stands at over 80%. In an interview, Douglas Monzora, the MDC spokesman, told DW that more demonstrations were yet to come.
This is the beginning of mass demonstrations. We are going to embark on these marches and demonstrate until this government has become sensitive to the wishes of the people of Zimbabwe, until this government has become to show responsibility. This is a demonstration, a march against poverty and corruption. Poverty that Zimbabwe has been consigned to by this government. We have a missing $15 billion. We have an empty promise of 2.2 million jobs, which are not there. We have massive corruption in this country. So this is what this demonstration is about. It is a demonstration about issues. It's not a demonstration about regime change. It is a demonstration about what this government is not doing right.
Earlier this year, President Mugabe said there was $15 billion missing from Zimbabwe's diamonds proceeds, but did not explain who had stolen the money. Since then, Zimbabweans have been calling on the government to open up on the issue. They want the money to be put in better use to benefit Zimbabweans. As Zimbabwe marks its 36 years of independence, more than a quarter of the country's 13 million people are facing hunger and are in need of food aid.
DW's Columbus Mavunga in Harare.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to our brand new series. It's called Crime Fighters, Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill. And the author is none other than Mukoma Wangugi. This is the first episode, entitled Death Has No Manners. We invite you to come with us to Ketagu People's Republic in Africa, where Detective Kalumba and his team are about to investigate a new case.
It always begins with a dead body. Always, yet we work on behalf of the living. This is what we tell ourselves, that justice is for the living. But I've long suspected that we, the detectives, the deliverers of justice, also die a little each time we come across a dead body. Death is absolute, living is finite. In the encounter between the living and death, death steals a little piece of the soul each time. I know many detectives who've taken to drugs. My partner Chokbank is a good man. But these last few years, death has started to win him over. Now he comes to work drunk, sometimes even high on drugs. Salamisha, one of the few women detectives on the force, and me, we are trying very hard to pull him back. This is what I was thinking about as Chokbank, Salamisha and I arrived in a wealthy suburb out in Malu, the capital city of Kitagu People's Republic. A young man, Peter, had just been found dead.
Ooh, Kalumba, Salamisha. Oh, Jesus. Look at the size of this place. It reeks of wealth. Look at that marble. Oh, you see that silverware? That would pay my rent for a month.
You mean you could get a month's supply of weed or cocaine? I guess we can count on your expertise.
Ah, Salamisha. Why must you keep bringing up my past?
There's no past for people like you, Chokbank. Once an addict, always...
Stop it, you two.
Okay.
At least show some respect. The parents are here.
Good afternoon, detective.
Good afternoon.
It was obvious what had killed him. Drugs. Small bags of cocaine and probably illegally procured pain medication, narcotics, lay on the bedside table. There was vomit all over the bed, but no signs of a struggle in what was otherwise a tidy room. Suicide? The drugs could have been administered by force. But even if it was suicide, we still had to answer some basic questions. Who sold him the drugs that killed him? And who were the drug dealers working for? We had to follow the drugs and the money.
Mama Peter, Baba Peter, there's no need for you to see this. Is there somewhere we can go talk?
Yes, let's go to the sitting room.
Walking from the bedroom to their sitting room was like walking through an exhibition of luxury. Obscene wealth in a country of paupers. Or 10 millionaires and 10 million beggars, as someone once said. But I'm not a politician. My job is to find the murderer. What I do know is that the filthy rich are also rich in enemies.
Detectives, thank you very much for visiting us in these difficult circumstances.
Would you like anything to drink? Water, soda, beer?
No, thank you.
Beer for me, please. I'm just being polite.
I also get my best ideas after a few beers. I'll call the housewife so he can bring us some.
Sir, madam, what can I get you?
Puma, give this man a beer at once.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
At your service, sir.
We are trying to establish a motive. Do you know anyone who would wish harm to your son?
He was such a gentle, loving boy. I can't think of anyone.
Baba Peter, if you don't mind my asking, how did you make your money?
What? So now my money, our money, is the problem? My boy is lying there dead, and all you can think about is our money?
You must forgive us. Death has no manners, and neither does my husband.
I'm sorry, but I must ask. It could be important.
I'm an old man now. All my debts are settled. I made my money buying cheap real estate, renovating the properties and reselling them at a profit. All above board.
Was Peter in any trouble?
Like my wife said, he was a good boy. He was 21 and he loved to go to parties and discos. But he was never in any trouble.
Did Peter have a girlfriend?
No.
The thing is, until we hear from forensics, we won't know whether it was suicide, a drug overdose, or possibly murder. But if it does turn out to be murder, the sooner we start investigating, the better.
I can tell you right now, it's not suicide. He wouldn't do that to his mother. And where's the suicide note?
Who found your son?
It was Fuma.
The houseboy? Would he...
Give drugs to our son? Or kill him? No, certainly not. Fuma's been with us since he was a boy. He's like a son to us.
Detectives, I'm sure you understand. We need some time to be with our boy.
Yes, of course. One of the uniformed policemen will accompany you to the morgue. But as we were leaving, Fuma secretly handed us a note. Nothing here is as it seems. Meet me at 6 p.m. at the lounge. So off we went to the lounge with the ever thirsty chalk bank lady in the charge. The Fuma we met there was nothing like the houseboy I'd encountered earlier at Baba Peter's. He was wearing expensive shoes and a mismatched three-piece suit, which I was pretty sure belonged to Baba Peter. And he was smoking expensive-looking cigarettes.
Hey there! Three beers for my guests. Unless the lady wants something more ladylike.
Beer's fine with me.
Five beers then. Two for the lady and one each for the men. And some chairs for my guests.
So Fuma, why are we here?
Walls have ears, and so do houseboys. I often overheard Peter talking on the phone. It sounded as if he was into hard drugs.
Do you know where he got his stuff?
Yes, I do. But I have to be honest with you. I go there myself from time to time.
It's all right. We're not going to come after you for that. The coroner might say it was a suicide. But if it was murder, we want to be informed and ready.
Then you are in the right place. Just look around. You'll find what you're looking for. I'll be right back.
Wait a minute. Were you very close to the boy and his family?
Since when have sheep and lions been friends? Let me water the nation, as they used to say. I'll be right back.
Who the hell is this guy? I mean, do you believe that...
The Lord save your souls, my children. Give your souls to the Lord Jesus Christ.
What the hell is this preacher man doing here?
You know how the preachers of Getagu are. They simply have to visit the den of sin.
There is no God at the bottom of your beer bottles. There is no salvation at the tip of a needle. Drugs, drugs everywhere. No water to drink. Marijuana, cocaine. Fake drugs for malaria, for measles, for AIDS. Drugs to cure. Drugs to kill. Come to the Lord, my children, and you'll get real medicine. I promise you, healing medicine, not false drugs.
Hey, get out! Get out! Out of the trouble! Salamisha, Kalumba, are you okay?
That's it for today. What's going on in the bar? Tune in next time to find out what's happened to Salamisha and Kalumba. In the meantime, you can listen to this episode again on our website, dw.com/crimefighters. We would also like to hear what you think of our new series. Let us know on our Facebook page. Until next time, bye-bye.
And before we leave you, a quick recap of the main stories. South Sudan is eagerly waiting for the arrival of rebel leader Riek Machar and the subsequent formation of a transitional government of national unity. In Addis Ababa, the Munich Security Conference ended with leaders calling for global approach to security threats. There, we come to the end of this broadcast. You can contact us by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or you can send us a short message to +49 160 957 59510. The number again is +49 160 957 59510. And my name is Abubakar Jallo, reporting from Bonn in Germany. Bye now.